Good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, first day of June, 2016, 1:13 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you, and in the bottom of this hour, we are going to be joined by 96-year-old Dr. Henry Heimlich. Dr. Henry Heimlich, famous for inventing the Heimlich maneuver. On May the 23rd, Dr. Heimlich was at his home, his retirement home, sitting next to an 87-year-old woman. The 87-year-old woman started to choke, so Dr. Henry Heimlich stepped in, did his own maneuver, the Heimlich maneuver, and saved her life. We will have that interview with Dr. Henry Heimlich at 1:40. Coming up the last 20 minutes, actually 1:35 we'll go to it. The last, we'll do it for 20 minutes, then come back for 5 minutes at the end. So, 1:35, don't forget Dr. Henry Heimlich coming up here on WWGH Radio. But we do have some time here to sit and talk and do some open phone lines. We haven't talked much about Donald Trump. Or what about the animal in the Columbus Zoo, or Cincinnati Zoo, excuse me. What did you make of the comments yesterday by Jim Fowler of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, which are also playing on our news? Should the gorilla have been shot? This news has erupted everywhere. So what do you think? Should the gorilla have been shot? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And what do you make of the comments by Jim Fowler yesterday of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom? Also, Dr. Art Uhlein, we want to thank him for coming in. What a great pleasure that was. And hopefully we'll have him back on very soon to discuss Alzheimer's, because that's something I wanted to do that we did not get to today, and also discuss a little more about depression. So again, 740-383-9944, the phone lines are open. Now, of course, we cannot get through a day without talking about our dear friend Donald Trump, and today the Donald Trump story is the press conference that he had yesterday. Hold on, I think we're going to get a call here, which I certainly appreciate. Hey, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Scott. It's me bothering you again.
No problem. We need the bother.
Hey, I was very interested in that thing, but I'll tell you, some things, maybe they shouldn't, but they irritated me. Here's a guy that's in great health, same age as I am, and I'm in good health. My wife's not, and he says she should get up and walk and all this. She can't. She cannot walk. She's fallen 5 times in a 2-month period. And he doesn't show much empathy for people who have other conditions.
I think, and maybe I'm just reading into it, but Dr. Uhlein, I think, would be talking about maybe somebody who's just shuffling, loss of energy. Without being too personal, is there an illness that might be causing this?
Yeah. She has a lot of joint problems. In 2-3 different places, it's bone on bone. It hurts her to walk.
Yeah.
I'm talking, she has to use a walker. She enjoys going to the grocery stores as long as they've got something she can ride in. She can do that. But like I say, he's talking, I can go out and climb mountains, so good for me type of, that's crap. I'm not particularly overweight, maybe under the one scale that someone 6 foot should weigh 140 pounds, but I never thought that was real people.
Well, it's interesting because I think the conversation that Dr. Uhlein and I have shed some light on some things, because I think a lot of people don't realize that so many people go on diets. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I don't think people realize that you can lose weight, but you can kill your metabolism, and that's permanent.
Oh, yeah.
So there are healthy people out there who are overweight just for the fact that they've done something in their life that killed their metabolism, and apparently this has baffled all scientists and doctors.
Oh, yeah. The weight in some people is something that, who cares,
Well, I mean, I can tell people, and I say this all the time, I am certainly not at the weight that I should be at, but I do not eat sugar. Rarely, and I'm not diabetic. I do not eat flour, rarely. I did have some on Memorial Day. But in the span of a normal day, a normal week, I do not eat the whites. I don't do flour. I don't do sugar. But I think at some point I could have killed the metabolism, because at some point I have done things. Now, my problem is in general, though, but I'm not on any medication either. Hmm. So, you know, and my blood pressure is always on the dot. No cholesterol problems, no joint problems, no, at this point, and I'm not, you know, a senior citizen, but nothing yet. I'm not 20 either, though. So I think, you know, you can eat healthy, you can extend your life. I think of people like Kay Ballard and Pat Carroll, who we have on. Now, those are women, but one is about 91 and the other is 89, and they've always been big.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, I think you can overcome that.
I'm sort of the opposite. I'm like you. I'm on no medications of any kind, which is amazing for someone my age, I guess. But I eat the flour. I enjoy it. You know, sometimes I think it's sort of the mental health of people, too. We had a very elderly neighbor next door to us for years. A great man. Just a nicest person you ever met. But he had heart failure. I mean, you know, congestive heart problems. So they made him quit smoking. This is a fellow from Kentucky who's smoked all his life. I never saw a person more miserable. What the doctor said is he, you know, accepted that that's what he should do. He probably would have willingly given up a couple years of his life to have a cigarette.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about the lung cancer that I think is kind of interesting. Now, if you are standing at the bus stop for high school and you have just started smoking, there is no doubt that that can cause cancer. And there have been people in their 40s, 50s, 60s who have died very prematurely because of lung cancer due to smoking. Now, the opposite side is, and I guess it's Russian roulette, but there is a group of people who are now hitting 80 years old who, when they were kids, this is not to absolve them, but people smoked on television, people smoked in the movies. There was not a Surgeon General warning on the pack. And if you've made it to 80, like maybe your friend here or somebody out there listening, and you have never been diagnosed with lung cancer, just like Dr. Euleen said, I thought this was interesting, he's 80, he does not take the prostate check anymore. Because even if he got it at this point, it's probably not going to be what kills him, because it's going to take a time for that to develop.
Right.
And I think the same thing, if you've made it to 80 without lung cancer, by the time it would develop, if they haven't caught it yet, you know, you're probably going to die from something else.
Oh, sure. So I actually had the prostate cancer, probably still do. The doctor was sort of amazed. I went to him on another thing, and he says, have you gone over and had your PSA test or whatever it is? I said, no. He says, don't care, do you? I says, no. I don't have any realistic thought that I'm immortal, but I'm going to go out my way.
Well,
my mother, she had breast cancer. She went, she had the mastectomy. It came back. And her comment was, they're not going to cut on me anymore. And she died. And in a way, I admire the fact that she wasn't going to put up with the totally useless medical thing that is going to do nothing but hurt her.
Well, it's very interesting, because it's a tough conversation, because I know people in their 60s who do what your mother did. And
She's in her 50s.
And I understand that. I get it. And I admire the answer much the way you do. But I also think in your 50s, that is early in life.
Yes.
And if there is something that can be done that might work, just like the 85-year-old I was talking about, whose, you know, name I'm not going to give because maybe they wouldn't want me to. They're not here anymore, but maybe the family wouldn't.
Yeah.
There was nothing terminal that I could figure. Now, I think they would have told me I was that close to them, but she had pulmonary problems, she couldn't work anymore, and she had been in the hospital last year for a touch of MRSA that she had gotten in an open wound in her foot that was actually caused by a bunion, of all things. And she just got to a point where she did not want to go to the hospital anymore. And they put her on hospice. And I'm kind of back and forth on that, because even though she was 85, and that's well past the life expectancy, I couldn't figure out what was killing her. Now, eventually her kidneys shut down because she stopped eating.
Yeah.
But I don't think anything medically killed her.
Yes. You know, sometimes, Scott, I mean, you're not near that stage, but sometimes you just get tired. And that may have very well been the case.
Do you think, though, because the mind is fascinating, and this is why I want to do the show on Alzheimer's, and I want to do more with depression, because I have often wondered when I saw her, because this was a lady, and just to give a little more background, and I don't think it'll be too obvious who it is, but she had outlived all her kids.
Yeah.
She had five kids, and they'd all died. And she had a husband, and he had been dead for 12 or 13 years. And I know she was depressed for the last 12 or 13 years, especially at the holidays. Hated the holidays. And I often wonder if that was a clinical depression that led her not to want to go on. Yes, you can make your own decisions, but she certainly had a reason to be depressed.
She probably felt there wasn't any reason to keep up with it.
Right.
And if she had physical pain and other things, which I'm fortunate I don't. But I can see that she could be depressed, and finally just thought that's enough.
Well, and Alzheimer's and dementia is becoming a very interesting topic with me, because I have ran into two people recently who I have known for a long period of time, more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to notice things about them that,
yeah.
And other people have noticed it too, but you don't see it all the time.
You can see it in the eyes.
Is that where it is?
Yeah. I mean, a fellow, very sharp guy that I worked with over GTE, he used to come in, you know, where I was working and say hi and everything. He got it. And toward the end, he would come in and he would smile, and you could see in his eyes he didn't have any idea who he was talking to.
What?
One of my brothers, like I say, I'm the oldest of five. Two of my brothers have Alzheimer's. One of them did die from it. We had a reunion. I saw him shortly before that. He was at such a stage that his daughter had to take him to the bathroom. He couldn't do it himself.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about one person who I know now, who I worked with. I don't work with him anymore, but I worked with him in television years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I noticed it, because this person, I see them quite a bit, and they always knew my name. They still do. Mm-hmm. Always knew my name, always knew who I was. If I would talk to them, you know, small talk, how's the weather, what do you think of the presidential mm-hmm. election, they knew. They could do that, still can do that, as far as I know. But I remembered one time I was talking to them, and we did this television show for at least a year. You know, every week, filmed five episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought up the name of somebody who we saw every week. And there was not just, I don't remember that name. There was no recollect of the person at all.
Yeah.
And the other strange thing was, a lot of times there would be events to go to, and you would call and say, hey, can you be there? They'd say yes, and then not show up and not call and tell you why they didn't show up.
Yeah.
Or walk into a place and say, I've never been here before, when they have been there before.
Yeah, at the funeral of my brother that died, my other younger brother was there, who has the early stages of it. But he was going to go over to the funeral, but he couldn't remember how to get there.
Yeah.
I did go over and visit him after the funeral, And he was okay then. And his wife said that he has some real good days and other days that he's in another world.
Well, and that's what I wonder. If you are living alone, or maybe your kids are gone and you are in your 80s or 90s, and you develop this, I don't think you're aware of it.
So, no, you wouldn't be.
So how do you know?
Yeah, well, the brother that died there, it was obvious in his case. He would go out and get in his car, and his wife would say, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm going to see Mom over in Richmond. She's been dead for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to take his, pretend he'd lost his, he would want to drive somewhere, and they say, "Oh, we lost your keys. We can't, or the cars won't start and stuff." They had to make sure he couldn't hurt himself or others. It's a sad thing.
It is. It's a cruel disease, and I hope we're able to get Dr. Uhlein on in the next week or so to discuss that a little further, and also get a little more in the depression. But it's interesting, that's for sure.
Well, we have to do it day by day.
That's exactly right. Hey, thank you for calling in.
Sure.
Bye-bye. Bye. Again, the phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. If it rings busy, just means we're on the line with somebody else. We are going to get to Dr. Henry Heimlich here momentarily. 740-383-9944. Now, I did want to play something. Donald Trump and his little war with the reporters. We're going to try to get this in before we go to Dr. Heimlich. So here we go. Donald Trump yesterday with the reporters talking about the veterans' money he had raised.
Calling us the dishonest press, the disgusting
press.
Well,
generally speaking, that's 100% true.
But I disagree with that, sir. And if I can ask you this question, it seems as though you're resistant to scrutiny, the kind of scrutiny that comes with running for president of the United States.
I like scrutiny, but you know what? When I raise money, excuse me, I've watched you on television. You're a real beauty. When I raise money for the veterans, and it's a massive amount of money, find out how much Hillary Clinton's given to the veterans.
Right.
Nothing. And then I see a few guys standing out there. They don't even know what they're there for.
Right.
They have no idea. They're there because Hillary Clinton's campaign sent them. And actually, I think it was you or one of you that found out that they actually were with Hillary Clinton's campaign, which was interesting. But I wasn't surprised. I don't want the credit for it. But I shouldn't be lambasted. And remember this. So out of the almost $6 million that was raised, not one penny did I take for administration costs. That's unheard of. Okay.
Well, why do you continue to attack the press, though, Mr. Trump?
In all fairness, when you talk about not wanting to get credit for this, you did host a very public fundraiser that was televised.
How else am I going to raise the money?
Sorry?
How else am I going to raise the money?
So what I'm asking, I guess, is when you did this fundraiser, you did it, it was televised, you were doing
sure.
it, instead of doing the debate, it received wide attention. Some
sure.
people say that it may have helped your campaign.
I would have given this out, just so you understand, until I was criticized. So I'm the only one in the world could raise almost $6 million for the veterans, have uniform applause by the veterans groups, and end up being criticized by the press. Yes. I made a speech, and during my speech, I said, let's raise a little money for the vets. It turned out to be a lot of money, not a little money. I thought if we could get to $1 million, it would be great, which it would have been.
But since then, you repeatedly touted the fact that you raised millions
That's right.
of dollars for veterans.
That's right. I do raise millions. No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Mr. Trump, writing $1 million check is incredibly generous, but the night of that Iowa fundraiser, you said you had raised $6 million. Clearly you had not. Your critics say you tend to exaggerate, you have a problem with the truth. Is this a prime example?
No, I raised almost $6 million. Some of it didn't come through, but more money is coming through than didn't come through. The number probably is going to be, when we finish it, probably going to be over the $6 million. Yeah.
But why exaggerate?
Yeah, go ahead.
Good to see you, sir. So to follow up a little bit on what Jim was saying, you do realize that when the Democrats are out there raising questions about this money, the press is also reflecting what your opposition is saying about you. It's not just us throwing questions at you, because it's coming from some of them.
I don't mind it coming from the opposition, though, Carl. What I do mind is when I raise all of these millions, and when we started out, nobody ever thought it was going to be over $5 million,
but now you're
close to six.
But what you're doing is you're answering the questions now that we had back then. It was just a question.
All right, so
it's
look,
a question
here's
and
the
attack.
Story. Here's the
it's
story.
A question and
I
attack.
Think, and I've been dealing with the press a long time, I think the political press is among the most dishonest people that I've ever met. I have to tell you that, okay? Of course, you're excluded, Carl. But I think the political press...
Wait a few minutes.
I think the political press... I see the stories, and I see the way they're couched. For instance, I went down this weekend to do Rolling Thunder. I was invited. I didn't have anything to do with it. We had a tremendous gathering of people. Thousands, I don't know how many, but many thousands of people. And I joked. Oh, I thought we were going to go from the Jefferson Memorial to the lake. I was joking. They said Donald Trump was disappointed. Everybody knew I was being sarcastic and joking. They said, some of them, said Donald Trump was very disappointed that it didn't go from Jefferson to Lincoln. You know, millions of people. I was joking. I said, oh, I'm used to watching it. I was joking. So they put it down as serious. They know I was joking. I'll give you another example. We had the same event. It was roped off where you could only get so many people there. And there were a lot of people. I don't know, 10,000, 15, maybe 25,000. I don't know. There's a lot of people. Plus, there were people breaking the seams all the way along. Gene Washington, a man I like, actually, wrote an article like there was 5,000 people there. There were many times that. And you weren't allowed to have any more people. And all of these people were with their motorcycles in parking lots all the way. They're waving to me as I'm going by. But wait a minute. The point is, law enforcement, these people, didn't allow you to have any more people. I think the press knew that. I had a tremendous crowd, but it was the biggest crowd you could have had because it was all cordoned off. You weren't allowed to have any more. They weren't allowed to have.
And that was Donald Trump with the press, and in the course of that, he also called somebody a sleaze. So, there you go, called a member of the press a sleaze. We are going to play the interview with Dr. Henry Heimlich and then come back, and if we have time, we'll take your questions on the whole Donald Trump thing. 740-383-9944, but let's get to the interview I conducted yesterday with Dr. Henry Heimlich.
This is Scott Spears. And on Monday, May the 23rd, something quite interesting happened here in Ohio. 96-year-old retired chest surgeon credited with developing and the namesake of the Heimlich maneuver, Dr. Henry Heimlich, used his own maneuver, the Heimlich maneuver, to save a woman choking on food at his senior living center, 87-year-old Patty Rist, to be exact. What an amazing event. Dr. Henry Heimlich, I'm so proud to say, joins us via telephone. Dr. Heimlich, how are you?
Just fine.
What happened last Monday? Can you take us through it, Dr. Heimlich?
Well, I was sitting, I'm at the Dupree house here, and I was sitting in the dining room for dinner at a table. It was a table for four, and there were two other people there. However, in a few minutes, another one of the members here came and sat down next to me, and was over present for a while, and then suddenly I looked up over at her, and I knew she was choking. Her mouth was partially open. Her lips were up. She was not breathing, and her skin was getting darker. So I knew exactly what was happening. And I went over to her. I turned her to her side, sitting on her side on her chair, and I put my arms around her, and I did a Heimlich maneuver, which I repeated, pressing it into her abdomen two more times, at which she started breathing and looked perfectly well. So that was quite significant in my life to be called on doing the very maneuver that I just devised so long ago.
Dr. Heimlich, do we know why she was choking?
No, she had perhaps started to speak or something, but the fact was that her breathing changed, and she wasn't breathing, and her as I say, her mouth was open, and that was all diagnostic of choking.
Did you have any hesitation to do it at all, being you're 96 and she's 87?
No, I feel pretty young at 96, but it's been so much a big part of my life, and I saved so many lives that I just knew exactly what to do and went ahead and did it.
There have been a lot of reports that this is the first time that you have ever performed the Heimlich maneuver on somebody. Is this the first time that you've ever done that?
I believe it is. Some people are questioning it, saying I did do report another one quite a few years ago. Maybe I did, but I do not remember it.
Could you tell us a little bit of how the Heimlich maneuver came about?
Yes. Well, I have been through all of my medical life a chest surgeon, and I've brought out many patients for different things in their chest and in their lungs. And I at one period became interested in the terrible situation where so many hundreds of thousands of people have been choking to death. Because there was no treatment for it. And when I looked into what had been done for years, actually by the chest physicians and the science, many scientific, basically, the Red Cross was teaching people since the 1930s to slap them on the back if they're choking. And with that, all the choking victims were dying. Slapping the back, at most, caused a little piece of meat or food that was in the airway, blocking their air, go even tighter into the airway. And so I took it on myself to see what could be done. And I conceived of doing something that causing a choking object, well, let's say a small piece of meat, which had gone into the airway and not into the swallowing tube, and was causing the patient to die by blocking their airway. There had to be a way, within reason, that could remove that choking object and prevent the death. And I conceived, again, being a chest surgeon, that the object is in the airway and blocking the person from breathing in. But it would be possible, perhaps, to compress the air and cause a flow of air that was sufficient to carry the object away, out of the breathing tube, and out of the patient. And I did some studies in my laboratory with some of my doctors helping carry them out. And object away. And I did many studies and measurements on that, and it was absolutely proven that that was possible. So I did some studies on a dog without hurting a dog, anesthetizing them, and putting a tube into their airway, and pressing upward on the diaphragm. And I did that on several doctors, including myself, not with the tube, but simply pressing upward on the diaphragm, which compresses the lung sufficiently to carry an object that's choking a person through the outside, through the tube that is blocking and saving them. And the studies became so specific, I knew it was possible and introduced it as a thing to do. And where many people were choking to death, the Road Cross was teaching the people to be teaching the people to be saved to be hit on the back, and every one of them was dying. So I introduced this idea, and particularly in areas where many choking events occurred, and proved very specifically it could save a life, and indeed it started saving lives. Of course, that's now up into the thousands.
For those of us who might end up in the position that you were in last Monday, how do you do the Heimlich maneuver?
What is, you got to push the diaphragm upward, because the problem that is there is that the choking object is caught down in the airway, and you've got to push the diaphragm upward. And I had done tests which showed that that would cause sufficient flow of air to remove the object. And therefore, I established a method, and let me describe it to you. What is now called the Heimlich maneuver. The rescuer stands behind a person who is choking, and they can be sitting or standing, the person who is choking. Stands behind him. He makes a fist with either one of his hands, and he places the large side of his fist, of one of his fists, down on the abdomen between the belly button and the rib cage, so that by pushing in that area, he will push the diaphragm upward and get that flow of air that will save the person. So the first thing to do is to make a fist and place it down above the belly button and below the rib cage. Grasp the fist with your other hand. You're behind the person. You grasp the fist. You put your other hand around to it. And then you press the fist suddenly inward and upward, and repeat it as many times as necessary. In fact, it's usually the first and the third time the object that is choking actually flies out the mouth and is thereby discharged from the airway. And that's why they survive.
how did it come that the maneuver would be named after you?
When I first started out, the medical group, I started it in California, but then got it out to the very quickly to the entire public. And the question was, how can you save most people most favorably? And I was able to establish that and establish it widely through the United States, and then eventually it went to all the foreign countries. And after I got it out, it so quickly was saving lives. And one day I got a call from the editors of the American Medical Association Journal of the AMA, Journal of the, and the three editors were on the phone. And one of them said to me, this is saving so many lives. So developed so quickly. We feel it should be named for you. And I expressed my gratification that they wanted to do that. They said, we don't know whether to call it a method or a maneuver. And I said, well, what is the difference? I said, well, a method is one that you do different things in a sequence. A maneuver is something that you repeat the same thing. I said, maneuver. And right after that, it was officially cited in the Journal of the American Medical Association that that was what the process would be called.
Dr. Heimlich, you're 96. Is there anything left you still want to do in life?
As I think you may know, during World War II, I volunteered for surgery that was I was in the U.S. Navy, and they were taking volunteers to work on a Navy group, especially in China. And it was very dangerous. But they needed a doctor for one section of it. And I volunteered to do that. And I spent my days in China during the war until it ended. I might say that at the end of the war, there was I was still in this unit, and the war had just stopped. And they brought a man in, a Chinese soldier, who had been shot in the chest by accident. He was riding a horse with his other soldiers. The one in front of him, his gun went off accidentally and he was shot in the chest. And he was brought in to me, and he died very quickly. His old chest was blown open. And I never forgot that. And I had a long, difficult things after the war. Americans and the Chinese should get together and bring peace to the world. Stop all the stupid shooting by these small countries killing each other without a reason. China and America could get together and just have a group that goes to these countries and says, let's stop these wars
question for you. It was reported that the lady that you saved, that you and her are going to go to the theater together. Has that happened yet?
No, it hasn't. We both take the bus here that takes us to various theaters.
Let's hope it does happen. I should mention that Heimlich's Maneuvers is your book. People can get that at all good retailers or online, BarnesandNoble.com, eBay, and Amazon. And Dr. Heimlich, how would you like to be remembered?
Well, I hope that something that I can participate in or something that occurs bring peace to the world. And it's certainly possible.
Dr. Henry Heimlich, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, one of a kind, Dr. Henry Heimlich. Hope you enjoyed that interview. We do have about 5 minutes left in the broadcast, so if you have anything to say about Donald Trump and his arguments with the media, or anything to say about Dr. Henry Heimlich, or the interview we did with Jim Fowler yesterday on the Gorilla, or anything with Dr. Art Uhlein that we did earlier on, give us a call, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give us a ring and we will put you up on the air. Also, do want to mention that Dr. Art Uhlein will be back with us next Wednesday. Here's a programming note. Next Wednesday, which will be Wednesday, June the 8th at 12 p.m., same time that we did it today. Art Uhlein, Dr. Art Uhlein, back with us next Wednesday, 12:10 to 1 p.m. to talk about Alzheimer's, depression, and maybe some more diet talk. Now, I'm going to give you a chance for a trivia question, but you've only got 5 minutes to answer, so you better have your thinking cap on or your Googling finger ready. The question is this. Dr. Heimlich, 96 years old, was married to the daughter of a famous dance teacher. Who was the dance teacher? 740-383-9944. Dr. Henry Heimlich was married for many, many, many years to the daughter of a famous dance teacher. Who was that? You can have a value meal to McDonald's. You can have 2 tickets to Tecumseh down in Chillicothe, Ohio, which starts on June the 10th. You can have 2 free bowling games for Buckeye Lanes for a group of 4. Or you can have To Die For Cupcake. But you have to be able to tell me Dr. Heimlich, Dr. Henry Heimlich, who we just heard, was married for many years to the daughter of a world-renowned famous dance teacher. Who was the dance teacher? Who, Dr. Henry Heimlich's father-in-law? Who was Dr. Henry Heimlich's father-in-law? A very famous man. 740-383-9944. Or if you'd like to talk about treated the press during the whole conversation yesterday with veterans, calling actually one of them a sleaze. We didn't have that on the tape, but he did refer to them as a sleaze. We do have about 3 minutes left in the broadcast, 740-383-9944. Don't forget, we'll be live tomorrow starting at 10 o'clock in the morning with the Faye Bank. Well, actually, 9 o'clock in the morning, excuse me. The Adam the Computer Guy show will be on from 9:10 till 10 a.m. Fascinating show. Learn all about computer needs, wants, haves, and he also updates you on technology. Boy, a storm must be brewing outside. I'm hearing all kinds of noise, and it must have came up quick. Either that's a storm or the dump. I think that might be the trash truck. Anyway, it's very loud. Boy, you lose your train of thought there. Adam the Computer Guy show tomorrow, 9:10 to 10 a.m. Faye Bank Charlie Evers show, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and then I'll be back tomorrow. And you never know who will be on. You never know who I'll book between now and then from 12:10 until 2 p.m. Now, also, don't forget Dr. Art Uhlein back with us next week, Wednesday, June the 8th, 12:10 to 1 p.m. To discuss Alzheimer's, boy, my memory's going, Alzheimer's, depression and maybe some more weight loss things, because he's going to send me his weight loss thing, so that should be very interesting. I'll be versed in it. We can talk about that. But you do have about a minute and a half left to win a prize. Who was Dr. Henry Heimlich's father-in-law? Do you know the answer? Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I got a wild guess.
Go ahead.
Arthur Murray.
It was Arthur Murray. And that was a wild guess, huh?
Yeah, it was.
Now, do you remember who his daughter was?
No.
I think she had a famous name here. Hold on, I'm going to look her up.
Was it Anne Murray?
I think it's Jan Murray. But let me look this up real quick.
There was an Anne Murray that was an actress.
Let me see here. Henry Heimlich was married to... Oh, boy, you think his wife's name would be here. I'm pretty sure it was Jan Murray, but I could be wrong. Because I know she wrote a book at one point.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, hold on here.
Yeah, that was just a wild guess. That's the only famous dance teacher I could think of.
Jane Murray. Jane Murray. She was married to he was married to Jane Murray, who passed away a few years ago. But Jane Murray, and yes, his father-in-law was Arthur Murray. What would you to die for? Cupcakes?
I'm not eligible yet.
Oh, not eligible yet.
4 days.
But I'm glad you got the answer. Hey, thank you for calling in.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye bye. And that's all the time we have today. Hey, this is Scott Spears on this day, this beautiful June day, heading for the dugout. Come back with us tomorrow and stay tuned to much more here on WWGH Radio.
When we're joined, this is great pride and privilege for the first time, by Joy Behar. You told a story on The Tonight Show after you left The View with Jay Leno that Barbara had threatened to fire you at one point.
No, she did fire me. She didn't threaten to fire me.
She fired you.
Yeah, she told me she was not renewing my contract. You know, I spilled the beans inadvertently about Rosie O'Donnell coming on the show to the press, and Barbara was about to announce it on the Emmys, and she had a fit, and she was furious with me, and she fired me. She said, I'm not renewing a contract, on the phone. I was like, well, it was a mistake, and she said, it was a big mistake. And then she took it back in like a half an hour.
When I typed in your name last night, something came up from your appearance on The View on Tuesday, I think it was.
Yeah.
Snooki was on, I guess.
Oh, she was?
Yeah, and I think...
Not when I was there.
One day this week, I think she was on. He gave a quote to one of the internet sites that says,